Hello and welcome to Cursed Content Fight Club, the only club where we put two movies of let's not spoil things, indeterminate quality, up against to each other and see which one wins. I'm your host, Mr. Feel. With me, as always, are my co-hosts, Dan and Bob, video games from gigaboots.com.
You're a regular UPN sitcom, Bob.
What does that mean?
KZ Excellent from KZExcellent.com.
I hate evil white men.
And Dr. Aggro from Dr. Aggro.
I hate evil people of all nationalities. Hashtag them too.
Thank you, Aggro.
I'm glad we get the full scope together.
I don't see color, only evil.
Wait, you only see evil?
That explains so much about you.
Aggro is like the reverse of the Three Monkeys.
He just always has the classrooms they live on.
Yeah, he's shooting beams of red energy out of all three holes.
See evil, hear evil, do evil.
I activated the zero system at some point in 2000, and it's just been running in the background ever since.
It's overheating. Calm down.
And because nobody demanded it, which means it's a great content idea.
Yup. That's how it always works.
We are putting up the Honeymooners live action movie, which, yes, exists, 2005, starring Cedric the Entertainer, up against the Flintstones live action movie from the 90s. So, of course, the Honeymooners first.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. As the format of the last few things we did. What a great theme month that everyone wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The theme month that sucker punched them three times in a row.
And by then they're oh, fucking, I guess.
I can't feel anymore. I hate Fridays.
They're like a reverse Garfield.
I hate Fridays.
Oh. So hey, is it Monday. Garfield with inverted colors? Is that what's going on?
He's buff.
Yes.
So you might be asking what is the Honeymooners and why aren't you cutting away to do the, because you haven't watched the movie yet. Well, we have actually watched the movie. I'm sorry. We watched it already.
This idea involved a fast track.
I think us doing Fight Clubs would be a lot more possible in the future if we didn't have to do a commentary for both movies. And since there are many things we would like to compare, that might be a good point.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's true. It's different show name, different rules.
Different rules. So in lieu of the normal funny ha-ha, Mr. Feel is summarizing the movie. I'll just say what actually happens in this movie. So The Honeymooners 2005. It's like the show. You have Ralph and Norton and their wives. Ralph is a fuck-up who gets into scams. And Norton is also a fuck-up and bashes holes into walls for no reason.
Yeah, he does.
It's really important that they characterize Ralph as being this person who gets caught up in the zeitgeist and does a really bad idea in order to hopefully make money. The beginning of this movie is him making a Y2K survival kit.
Yes, they really get obsessed with like him doing scams to the point it's detrimental to the movie, and I kind of think this movie was two scripts they squashed together.
Oh yeah?
No way.
just because it feels like it has like there's like 18 steps in the plot.
I mean, there's a part where we're asking the genuine question, are they just recycling as many things from the show's episodes as possible?
Yeah, because we hit the billiards thing, and I'm like,
that was the moment I wanted to hurt you, because I'm like, how did you thread the needle on
episodes out of 39, and I'm like, yeah!
I genuinely started getting anxiety when they said Fred Flintstone.
Oh, that was funny as hell. That was the funniest joke in the fucking movie.
I was like, I'm like, did you know? Did you plan this?
Tonight's not good for a dinner. Me and Ed need to go down to the large. She's like, what are you, Fred Flintstone? And I fucking lost
it. I'm like,
it.
No way.
I'm like, good, now make that joke again. Make the rest of the movie you calling him Fred Flintstone. And then look in the camera.
Dude, I was so afraid that they were going to try and sell shit on a TV.
I was also scared, honestly, because this I am really curious, like, how many of the, like, dozens of scams that they somehow weave into the actual plot of this movie, because they're fucking crazy, are from actual episodes.
See, here's the thing. Fanny packs, I don't think existed at the time.
Yes, yeah. that one didn't, but, like, the dog racing,
the
train.
The way they bought the train feels like something they would do on the one set they had for the episode.
It did feel like a set.
The scene that the wife goes through all the scams he's done was basically directly in the other episode we watched.
Yes.
She just actually had props to talk about instead of just calling
it
out.
Saying it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't that incredible?
Yes.
That was really incredible.
You know, there was a part where I said, what if this movie is just like the show, right, as we were starting and there's only three sets, so it's like 30 minutes for three scenes.
Yeah, I said that would be horrible because that means the kindling of their romance would have been 30 minutes long.
So the plot of this movie is Alice, Ralph's wife, wants to own a house. To which I respond, you live in New York.
Get out.
I'm sure it was so much better back in 2005.
Yeah. Hey, the financial crisis didn't happen yet.
Which one?
I guess that's true. Yeah, which one?
The more popular one.
Yeah, this is between 9/11 and the financial crisis. There's never a better time to buy land in New York.
So Alice and Norton's wife, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Trixie, I think?
Yeah, Trixie. Yeah.
They both work at the same diner, which seems like it came out of a period piece. Like, they have to wear the dresses.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 50s diner. It's very strange. But they run up on an old lady who they know because, you know, it's New York and everybody knows each other.
Mm-hmm.
An old lady's like, I'm selling my duplex. I'm selling it to this incredibly evil-looking white man.
It was kind of like shocking.
He literally looks like he came out. He rolled out of a tank.
He's like one of the guys who's teamed up with the Nazis to sell out Indiana Jones. I don't know. He's that type of evil white guy where it's like you can't take a punch, but somehow you're trying to profit here.
See. He looks like an Omni consumer products executive who was like grown in a lab.
Yeah. There's, I mean, that's Eric, like, Stoltz. He looks like the evil version of the guy from CSI Miami.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he was the heroin dealer in Pulp Fiction. He was the abusive dad in Butterfly Effect. This is what Eric Stoltz does.
He rolls up
in a movie to be the biggest dirtbag.
Oh my God, he was the abusive dad from Bucket. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I just didn't need to remember that movie. It's been 17 years.
So she's like, I'll sell you and Trixie my duplex. You can get a $20,000 down payment, and I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
What? This is New York.
Yeah.
What is that? 1/60th the value of the duplex? What fucking 300-year mortgage are they taking out?
Don't worry about it. They're no longer living hand to mouth.
But they run and tell their husbands, and it's like, we're gonna do it. We're finally gonna have a house. We each have $5,000 saved, so we only have to get $10,000 and 2 weeks, and then Ralph is like, oh, I ordered a bunch of stupid bullshit because I thought the Mets would win the World Series, so I ordered like Mets things to sell, I think.
Yes.
Like it's Mets World Series champs,
mm-hmm.
like clothes, which of course they do not win.
Well, the thing was, they did win,
yeah.
But the merch for some reason was of tiny teddy bears.
Yeah, I was like, how does this mistake even happen?
It was insane. I'm like, you know, in the Honeymooners, I trusted that Ralph was a functioning adult.
Yes, instead of just buying boxes based on hope.
Wait, what's in this box, mister?
You could just have whatever's in this box.
It hit the point really quickly with this movie where I'm like, Ralph, we have 5,000 in savings, right? He's like, about that, Dogecoin was going to the moon, okay?
Except anyone made money on that one.
Yeah, I really don't need this to come back because they will do that.
It's
And then he's like, okay, I'm gonna buy this old train that's being auctioned off like a rich guy's private train car. I'm gonna buy it and turn it into a tour bus. So they go to the auction, and Norton assaults an elderly Asian man and forces him out because he also wants to buy it.
This was a very funny scene. This was good.
I really appreciated this.
Because
so they force him out, and he keeps.
It's a really good bit because it's like, hey, that's a pretty old photo. And Katakawa or something, Katakami, is just like, it is? And he goes, yeah, absolutely. They actually have it right over here if you want to see it. He's like, oh, okay. And then he just leads him out the back door, and you see the guy realize this is a back door, and Ed starts slamming the door on him.
Right. Just like it's going to be hijinks. And they're going to be doing shenanigans, but no, he just tosses his ass out.
Yes. I know. Yeah. And then, yeah, he's like brutalizing this old man.
Despite all this happening, they're like, we'll start the bit again.
So Ralph wins the train for $1,000, I think it is.
I think it's 3,000. Yeah, it's 2,500 or 3,000, yeah.
It kept getting dinged because of the comedy section of him reacting to Ed making, and they're like, oh, you're going to pay more?
Yeah, because Ed, while trying to close his door, is throwing up his arm, and then the Japanese man behind the door is like yelling higher numbers. I really appreciate it, though, because when Ed finally lowers his arm, you hear Ralph just start yelling, 3, 2, 1, thank you! to end the auction.
Stop the count!
Ralph wins the train car and then finds out that it costs a lot of money to get a train car out of a sealed, abandoned subway station up to street level, something he apparently didn't fucking consider.
Yeah, because there's 20 feet of track.
Once again, original series kind of had faith that he was a functioning adult.
Yes. Okay, did anyone else, after this scene, just know the entire rest of the movie until the end was completely pointless? Yes. Absolutely, 100%.
Uh-huh. No, because they kept like having him come up with so much stupid shit. I'm like, which one of these stupid things is actually the plot?
Yeah, because they show the Japanese man looking at the bell for this train and like comparing it to an old picture. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to be that's a hook. That's obviously the only thing that actually matters. The rest of this movie's filler. And thus we have the rest of the movie happen.
Yeah, I felt like the train was going to be important, but it was so distant. And the way we were thinking about it while watching the movie, I was like, what if it just doesn't come back ever?
So Ralph is bummed out because the train thing is a non-starter, and he's like, oh, my wife's going to cut off my balls. And
and so she did.
And so she did on camera. They show everything.
Him and Norton are like walking around at night, depressed, and they find a dog tied up in a sack in a dumpster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to take this. And Norton's like, oh, I love this dog. Like, I'm going to take this dog. And Ralph's like, the super's not gonna let you have this dog, but he takes the dog anyway. And the dog is really fast. They're like, we're gonna race this dog, and that'll be the next scam that takes up the next 45 minutes of this movie.
Yes.
That's the next 45 minutes of this movie is them trying to get the dog into a race, assisted by John Leguizamo, who is a fucking con artist.
Yeah, best part of the movie.
I had a stroke. I was like, John Leguizamo's in this?
Yeah, when they do the opening credits and they go, and John Leguizamo, I'm like, what?
Which does include this funny, which does include a funny scene where John Leguizamo like pries open a padlock to get into some place. He's like, what? I forgot my keys.
Pretty sure this is just his character from the past.
It's like every character John Leguizamo plays almost.
I mean, they meet him, he's siphoning gas, and then he's like, no, this is me and my friend's car. I mean, we do this all the time.
We do it back and forth to each other.
It's hilarious. It's a thing we do. I like to think that this has nothing to do with the pest, because nothing in my life should be connected to that artifact.
Uh-huh.
but instead is like the prequel story for him and John Wick.
Yes!
He's in John Wick?
Yeah, he's the mechanic.
Yeah, in the first movie.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right. I forgot.
But yeah, I think he shows up in every movie. Like, we see a little bit of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt like it was a bit more prominent in the first one, was why I was, like, pointing to that.
Somewhere in this morass of them trying to get the dog on the race, there's a scene with the wives, Alice and Trixie, talking to the evil white man, what is his fucking name?
Eric Stoltz?
William Davis is the character's name. And he's like, I'm gonna turn that whole block into upscale apartments. I'll even save you guys a corner, cause you guys don't need. He's like presented as the villain, but he's really not. He's barely in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's barely in this movie, but when he does, he like him offering to give these women a place to rent comes off like he's inviting them to be slaves.
Yeah,
like it's very bizarre. His tone is very fucking creepy.
But
it's like very chipper.
He has that really annoying vibe where it's like, you're not necessarily evil, but I don't like you, so I guess you're just the villain.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like you skirt around him being racist to just be a rich piece of fucking shit.
It's like when you encounter a person where you're like, your argument's right, but I don't like your tone, so I just hate you.
There's a moment when he's talking to Alice, right? And she's just like, oh, we're not going to be able to afford the thing. And he's just like, yeah, I bet you wish you didn't drop out of high school now, or you went to college now or something. And I'm just like, fuck you, rich man. Go to hell.
It's like that first scene is insane, and it never gets that high again.
Yeah, I mean,
like usually you have a bad guy do evil things, and then he has evil personality traits. This guy just has one tag, and it's condescending, and they just crank that to 11, and that's the whole character.
Yeah, every scene he's in, he's just maximum levels of condescending.
Yeah, I don't get racist from him, but I definitely get he hates the poor.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's his character trait, and that's all you really need to be a supervillain, honestly.
I mean, he basically would fit up there with the dean in China, Illinois, where it's just he wakes up and drinks some poor people blood.
God!
Love that guy.
So the fucking 45-minute long dog racing plot includes a bunch more fucking Ralph blowing money, and of course it doesn't work out, so we have to get the unbelievably taxing and terrible and forced to be included in every movie where there's like two characters where they break up.
Yeah.
Like they have the fight, which will be resolved 15 seconds later because they only do it at the end of the second act.
You're right. It's like there's no
case,
time
almost
to do
the
this.
End of the movie.
This movie had 12 minutes left when that fight happened.
So he pisses off his wife and she fucks off. He chews out Norton for shit that's obviously his own fucking fault. And Norton gets pissed and leaves. And he's like wandering around the train again. He goes down to the fucking sewers and finds the train that he bought and is like, I'm going to set fire to this stupid investing book that I've been taking advice from the whole movie and a bunch of other shit. And then when he's burning it, he's like, wait, maybe I can sell the train to that guy we abused out of abused out of getting it.
Who has not called the cops.
Who has not called the cops. So he sells the train to that guy for $25,000.
That's because he's nice rich man, not evil rich man.
That's true.
Yep.
I kind of got the impression that the Asian guy was also kind of a scammer.
I know
the twist of this bell, so I want to buy this train.
Oh yeah, he's smart, but he's not like evil or malicious necessarily.
Right, he just wanted to go to the auction and get something he knew was valuable.
Yeah, pretty much. He's a normal human being, which is rarity in this fucking movie.
Also, real quick, because I know I'm not going to get a place to stick these in the segments, okay? There is a line he says from his guru who inspires him. I didn't write down the name of the inspirational book guru guy. But early on in the movie, he explains this guy, you know, he says smart things. And he's like, yeah, it's like he says, kick open the door and opportunity don't have to knock. And I'm like, opportunities knocking to let you into its house? Wait.
Yeah, it's like, opportunity comes to your door. You just kick down your own door.
Yeah, it's like, this doesn't work no matter which way you fucking put it.
Which is probably intentional because the book is full of bullshit.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. I was like, this metaphor breaks apart entirely. Like, you're either kicking down your own door and now opportunity isn't even there.
Thinking about our normal segments, there was something I wanted to like bury in here since it wouldn't come up naturally.
Okay.
We noticed the bus that he drives throughout the film. On the front of it has an ad.
Mm-hmm.
An ad for Pepsi Edge.
Yeah.
A soda I've never heard of. And then we went, oh, it's like, you know, it's just one of their off brands they had in the aughts. And I'm like, okay, that's a weird, tacky advertisement that's right there in the front in a couple of scenes. This movie came out in June of 2005. That flavor was announced and released in early 2004 and was discontinued a few months later. So
I don't even think it was product placement. I think it was just when we were filming this, that was the ad on the bus.
Yeah, that's how it seems more likely.
It's really funny that it's like you watch this movie and it's like, even if you saw it in theaters, there was no hope of getting that drink. Ever.
Yeah, as I said, when it first popped up, I'm like, Pepsi Edge, okay, as a soda junkie,
mm-hmm.
an absolute fucking addict who's tried everything, basically, that came out while I was alive, at least from the age 15 on, I'm like, that shit was not at a store by the time this movie came out. It did not last long enough. There's no way. Then KZ looked that up, and we confirmed, like 5 months. It lasted something like 5 months or something.
Oh, my God. Dude, you had it. Amazing.
Dude, it's for anyone who's curious, Pepsi's Edge is apparently their version of C2.
Yeah,
for anyone
I also
who's
like
curious
C2.
What C2 is.
Yeah, exactly.
C2 is a half...
Our half-calorie soda.
Normal, half-Diet Coke.
Yeah, they're half-calorie sodas.
Yeah,
And I was like, I don't like... Like diet, so like it came during the keto, the first when it was called the Atkins diet before keto was a term.
Mm-hmm.
So during the first, they were like, okay, we're gonna make these half calorie sodas because people don't really like diet soda, it turns out, by and large. So we'll make a half calorie soda, and I liked both of them, but nobody else did, which is why they both went away.
Yeah, I thought C2 was all right. The funniest thing is, it was very validating to me. Cause I do that shit at soda fountains all the time. I mix half a diet with a half normal.
Yeah, so do I.
Sweeteners have a multiplicative effect. It's not additive. Anyway, so that came out and I was like, look, see, I'm valid. And then it went away and I'm like, oh.
Sorry.
That's unfortunate. Now I feel bad.
Pepsi Edge, I probably didn't catch cause it's Pepsi and that. And it lasted like 5 months.
Yeah, at least C2 lasted like 3 years.
Yeah, C2 definitely lasted a year and a half at minimum. Anyway, we really got off topic.
Yeah, sorry, Pepsi Edge.
Also, I wanted to congratulate us. We spent that much time talking about how much of a piece of shit white rich dude the white guy is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We didn't mention the white omelet thing.
God.
He spends minutes just being like, I want a white omelet. And she's like, we don't have white omelets. We don't separate it from the egg. He's like, do you have anything like a white omelet? She's like, yeah, an omelet.
No, she literally just
Trixie's
goes,
like,
eggs.
Do I need to stab him with my heels?
Yes. That's fucking good.
Trixie tries to stab this man twice.
I know.
It's great.
They're just Valid. Walking down the street. He pulls up in his car to harass Alice and Trixie. And she's like, I'll cut you. Ralph sells the train car to the Asian guy for $25,000, and who pays it gladly.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph kind of picks up on that, but he's like, okay, so I'll ask for more than I need, but I don't want to push it because this is my only shot.
Yeah, he asks for $25,000 from him, gives him 0 seconds to process it, and then goes, okay, 20.
Yeah,
dude, you got to give him any seconds to say how he feels at all.
Is this good? Yeah. Okay, I need the check now. Movie's almost over.
He's like, come on, man.
Then he goes down to the sewers because Norton is works in the sewers. He does that also in the original series. They reconcile because he needs because he needs Norton to lead him through the sewers to get to the diner fast enough to buy the duplex before the lady signs the papers with the evil white guy, which is happening at this diner for some reason.
It's the only
not
place
like a real estate office.
This is the only place she will meet him. He doesn't trust this dude.
Yeah, it's a neutral meeting ground where all big business deals occur.
We had this set.
Yes, we have the Denny's.
So they get there. They successfully buy the house because the old lady's like, I'd like my home to remain a home and not be made into apartments for a transparently evil piece of shit. And then he goes to reconcile with his wife. He takes the bus from his job and puts like the destination as Second Chance. They give the really generic speech at the end that's in every fucking... Every one of these aughts movies where the fat fuck up has to fix his marriage with his wife. Or it's like, the only thing I've never fucked up is being in love with you. And she's like, aww. And then he reveals he bought the house, and we cut to the two families moving into the house, helped by John Leguizamo, who is now a mover.
Except
he's making them do it and supervising.
Yeah,
but he has a truck. Job. He has a truck with his name on the side.
and the dog is there because they now have a yard for the dog, and they're having a barbecue.
John Leguizamo even saves for the barbecue, which is insane.
Yes, he does.
That's great.
I guess he's their friend now.
I guess.
And then Ralph looks at the newspaper, I think it is, and finds out that the bell on the train, which Norton had insisted was made of brass and very fancy, was actually made of solid fucking gold and was worth over $1 million. And the Asian guy is in the paper for selling it. So Ralph gets pissed and chases Norton down the street. While yelling at him. That's the movie.
Ugh.
Welcome back.
It's 15 fucking scams in a row, and the first one works out barely.
I watched it on Tubi, I think is where I watched it.
What the hell's a Tubi?
Tubi TV. That's, yeah.
So it had ads.
But it was free to watch, right?
No, I watched it on Pluto TV. It was free, but it had ads.
Yeah. Those are the same tier of thing, yeah.
Man.
I watched it in HD on Amazon Prime.
You had to pay money for it.
Didn't
though.
You have it yeah. paused on frame one and all of us noticed awful banding immediately?
Part of me is still like, that's them trying to edit a thing. I don't know. Paramount logo. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I watched this fucking movie on YouTube. I don't know why you guys are going to all this effort.
Was it free there?
Yep.
Okay.
I also found it being free like last night when I was reviewing parts of it.
You know what, Aggro? There's a reason I get the legitimate release. We'll see you in worst scene.
Oh, no, that was legitimate. It's legitimate on YouTube. I don't understand it either, but it is.
Oh, my God. Okay. Is it like a free movie, like Throw Mama from the Train?
It probably was, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's tagged free and is on the verified YouTube movies channel.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry. It was worth the money.
It tax write-off. As someone who runs a YouTube channel, I know that quality at 1080p is not exactly good.
True.
In fact, I've watched multiple of their movies for free.
I'm very excited for you to write off $4.
I feel like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles didn't need to have that Amazon Prime HD quality.
So, since we've changed the format a little bit, we'll be doing our numbers at the end, so we need to go into our segments.
Okay.
So, first up is Best Character. Since he is not usually here, we're going to let Aggro start off on this one.
Now, I feel like there's a very, very obvious choice to make here. But at the 11th hour, I realized that I had my heart pulled in a different direction. For best character, I'm going to go with Lenny, who is the mechanic that Ralph calls down into the sewer to take a look at the train.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because this is just some guy that Ralph Cramden knows who will A, show up to the sewers, to B, attach 4 bus engines and some wheels to like a 19th century train car to turn it into what is surely not a street legal tour bus.
I know.
With parts he intimates that he fucking steals.
Yes.
Fucking awesome.
Like, this is the guy you want on the team.
He's like, I can get anything you want without paying for it.
Have you ever heard the song One Piece at a Time?
Yes.
He like came out of that song.
Basically.
He basically is a douche from the A-Team. Like, they have to do the plan at the end of the episode where they've turned something, their van into something.
Yes.
And he's that. He can do any of it.
He's like a character from the 70s when unions existed. He's like, they can't fire me because of the union. I stole 4 engines from them this month. Fuck them. next, we're going to go over to KZ.
This is tough. There's some strong candidates here. I'm going to go with the owner of the diner. I enjoyed all of his appearances in this movie. Whether it was his new uniform idea of whatever material to make it so you could spill
plastic.
Anything on the, yeah, it was like
that
plastic.
That was an early aughts music video material.
Yes.
Where it's like, you bore in, is no problem. That and just taking the calls of just like, are you the health inspector?
Hitting on Alice's mom.
That was really good, where she's like, I buried 2 husbands, working on a third. It's like, hi. It's like, I could be that one. But yeah, I enjoyed all those scenes. And also the moment where, you know, just Ralph walks in and tracks in stuff, and the health inspector's like, this is it. And I'm like, what? At no point is that the fucking establishment's fault.
You have not met enough health inspectors.
There's 2 kinds of health inspectors. Ones that are like, well, I don't have the plague from being in here, so I guess you pass. Or people who are hard asses.
There's
no middle ground.
Sorry, a customer came in here and farted. That's on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're gonna give you this D that you have to put on the window now. Dan.
It's not always golden material, but John Leguizamo's character in this, Dodge, is really good.
Yes. Yeah, he's the best part of this movie, easy.
Yeah, he's really good.
He definitely is. The energy he brings to a bunch of scenes, like, you can tell a lot of this is ad-lib from Leguizamo.
especially that one scene that's focusing on him from the front.
Yeah, there's a lot of good moments where they let him just go. There's one of my favorite moments from Leguizamo, outside of, you know, cool verbal jokes they deliver, is the moment a cop car goes by in the background and he's like, oh, it's the cops. And they all just crouch like it's a video game sight line, and the cop just leaves.
That really
got me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, that's straight up a video game. Like, what? In what world does that cop not see you from 40 feet away crouching in a spotlight? But yeah, no, he's really good. He's good at the barbecue. He's like, hey, I trained this dog to bring you beers. he's got lots of good bits. Also, he's a terrible fucking dog trainer.
Yes.
Well, he has many crafts.
Bob.
I'm going to go with Trixie. She doesn't have as much screen time as she probably should, but every time she shows up, she threatens to stab someone.
Yeah.
Or is generally a decent person.
And as it turns out, she threatens to stab the same guy over and over. And as someone who definitely agrees that guy deserves to be stabbed.
Yes.
It makes her the moral center of this movie.
Yeah, she does have that energy.
Yeah, sometimes best friend characters are like background dressing or filler, and sometimes you get that just ride or die character who you want to emulate in your own life.
Yeah, I think they did really well with her.
And I'm gonna go with White Man. I'm gonna go with William Davis because he's such a piece of shit.
Yeah, he has a really good first impression.
He's so condescending. His presence in the movie is like a bomb. Because it's like, when is he going to say it?
Oh,
He's just at the diner, and you can hear him boiling like a water kettle.
If this was a more kids-oriented movie, he would like, I don't know, at the end, fall into a bucket of slime and get carried away by the authorities.
Yeah, that
as they say, the like, community center. Like the,
remember Good Burger?
Yes.
He's the rich father of the manager of the Mondo Burger.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
He's such an effective villain, and he never actually does anything that's evil other than treat people poorly.
Yes, which is very funny.
They're like they're barely even like directly opposed, even though they are. Like only one of them can get what they want, but it's just like, hey. And they walk by each other in the hallway.
Yeah, there's literally only one moment, and it's when he tries to stop the dog race.
Yeah.
Yeah, he keeps a greyhound out of the racing scene. That's a positive thing in my book.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, oh, you stopped him after you had papers forged for this dog, so you really shouldn't be doing it anyway.
It was so weird, because it's like, that's also basically his first meeting with the husband.
Yeah, how does he know them?
Well, they do have one thing where he gets their name.
He makes a call and they check up on him.
He's like, look up Ralph, learn everything about him, and that sets up that he does the one thing.
But it's like there's no antagonistic relationship yet between them. This is where it forms here in the 11th hour when they're trying to do something 20 minutes from the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Now we're moving on to the worst character. Dan, I'm going to let you start.
Alice's
off.
Mom. She is a nonstop fat joke machine. And I'm like, lady, you don't have ground to sit on. What are you talking about here? Leave him the fuck alone. He sucks, but make fun of something else. Like,
we didn't even mention her because it's such an irrelevant part of the movie. But Alice wants to get the money from her mom, who is like a Golden Gloves boxing champion also, they say. Yeah. The implication is that she could beat the shit out of Ralph, so he's scared of her. And all she does in every one of her scenes is call him fat. Like, that's all she does.
Yeah. It's like, make fun of any other attribute of this character other than Cedric the Entertainer's portly. Please.
Although I did enjoy the part where she's like, here's a tip about eating: when you get to the plate, stop.
Yeah, that was actually funny.
Pure delivery.
And then she
is great.
Starts laughing at her own joke for maybe 25 seconds.
She is very enjoying herself.
You know, when she gives the money over and says something like, I don't know, it looked like Ralph had a lot of high anxiety there, so I felt bad. So yeah, I just get in here, you can have it. I was like, I wasn't even expecting that to ever.
He showed anxiety, which shows he's smart enough nowadays to worry. Also, isn't that weird? They got the money from her mom, but then he also got $20,000 from the... So I guess they gave back the money to the mom?
I guess.
It's a pretty irrelevant part of the movie, but... Right?
They should have included a scene where she's like, now we can give the money back to my mom. And he just looks at the camera and starts laughing.
he just transitions into my coach sound clips of, shit, no!
It just becomes that George of the Jungle bit where the three dudes just
throw back their heads and laugh. Could you imagine this movie ends on, we can get back the $10,000, and then Ed and Ralph look at each other and they're like, we already spent that shit on something stupid.
Yeah.
We freeze frame.
You just see the pile of those devices from the first Honeymooners episode we watched.
I spent this whole movie being like, is the happy hand wife handy gonna show up?
I was so afraid after they redid the billiards bit.
Yeah.
I was like, you did not pick the perfect episode that pairs with this movie.
It was so good.
Aggro, worst character.
This is another one I was really, really torn on. And at the end, I went with in a very early scene in the movie where Ralph leans out his window and shouts up to Norton, and he leans out with a plate of French toast and then drops it on a baby on the street below.
Yes.
That baby's mother.
Yes.
Having seen her infant struck with French toast from the sky.
Uh-huh.
Turns and immediately starts berating the produce vendor she's standing next to for obviously being the source of French toast from the sky. That woman is too stupid. To be the primary caregiver of that child.
I mean, I feel like that was just a brilliant commentary on customer service jobs and engaging with people. She's a real core part of American society, distilled in this one being who screams at a man who sells fruit because bread fell out of the sky on her baby.
Right, like they both go back in, and then Ralph comes back out to look, and I thought the joke was going to be she was going to blame Ralph for it.
She was going to see Ralph
be mad at Norton.
Yeah,
but at no point does she look up.
I was waiting the whole time. I'm like, there must be a reason the Ralph's head's still out the window here.
I know. He's really getting into it, right? He's shoving his whole upper body in.
Uh-huh.
He's just like, huh? Huh? It's, I too thought that was the bit. And instead, the bit is, this woman sucks. That's it.
Deep, isn't it?
KZ.
All right, there's slim pickings here, for in my personal opinion, but I'm going to give it to Ed Norton, mainly for that scene that happens during the race where he just pulls out the ball that distracts their dog to stop participating in the race, which I thought to be so stupid to force this conflict, because he was probably going to lose anyway. The dog was getting boxed in during that race.
He's stupid, like, on a level of, like, a cartoon character.
Yeah, which I was fine with, but that one was the worst.
The stuff in the intro where he just starts hammering through the wall
I don't know, Phil. It seemed pretty realistic given this house I'm in right now.
but if you say Bob, my light isn't working, Bob doesn't just start hitting the wall with a hammer.
Bob
doesn't get an axe and cut the chain on top of the light.
Yeah, Bob isn't the landlord.
Well, neither was Norton.
I think some of the things Norton brings to the movie. Sorry, Norton.
Yeah, I was like, we're not saying this right. What's happening?
Brings to the movie is actually pretty good. There's the whole, like, they're friends again, so he's going to give him the new rules for being friends.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He's like, you can't get mad at me. You got to let me choose. You got to do all this. Can you do that? He's like, fine, I won't get mad at you again. He's like, great, we're lost.
And he's like, call me Edward.
We can go that way or that way. And he's like, okay, you pick. And he goes, thank you. We'll go this way. And they go like 10 feet off screen and then sirens. Because question mark?
Yeah, I know. They're like, we don't know.
Like, where are you?
They're breaking into the sewer of a mansion? I don't know.
There's a dragon that way.
It's, I should have mentioned this sooner. I am shocked by how faithful this is to these characters.
Oh, yeah, it's insane.
They did an amazing job distilling those characters in these two. The only shortcoming is, like, you can't expect Cedric the Entertainer to be as good at faces as Jackie Gleason. Like, it just, that's not fair. That's it, though. Aside from that, they are true to the core. It's fucking awesome. I feel like, once again, I hate to bring it up, but there's no way the Brady Bunch movie is even that true to the characters.
It's probably a better movie, though.
It probably is a better movie.
I remember liking it.
It's not a hard hurdle to clear.
God, now I have to come up with something. So there's a character named Vivek.
No, you're lying.
Who is...
that's Deep Space Nine. I'm sorry.
Who is...
No, you're lying.
There's a character named Vivek who is like one of the passengers that keeps getting on Ralph's bus. And I'm starting to think just every aughts movie had this character who is like the Indian as in like the Asian country of India, not like Native American.
Yeah.
But like the Indian guy who's really horny.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember this guy.
He's like got a shaved head. I feel like I recognize the actor, but I've never seen him with a shaved head before.
He was in Office Space, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, he's just that character and I started getting scared because I remembered Paul Blart and the guy who's obsessed with feet.
Yes.
Oh, no.
And they're really the same character and like have the same tone and candor.
Oh, man.
It did. I do remember the scene with this guy made me think of exactly that and one other thing.
Oh, my God.
So he's just talking about his sex life to every time he shows up as like the joke. While Ralph hates it and it's bad. Bob, who's the worst character?
This is actually harder than it should be because a lot of this movie is just kind of mush, not like really bad.
Like, oh, every time this guy shows up, I want the movie to end. It's like, well, that's pretty redundant.
Yeah, no, it's not their fault. Mm. But I'm going to nominate Alice. I think that Alice has some good stuff, but also she's the center of like the really trite and bad romance thing where it's like they have to have a moment where they break up. And yeah. it's like such a typical 90s movie thing.
I mean,
or I guess early aughts movie thing.
Yeah.
It's a movies thing.
It is a movies thing.
It's a bleed over thing. She's so incredibly generic even compared to what she was in the show. I feel like she was more cruel in the show.
Yeah, there's not like any really good clever bickering between them. She's mostly just like, you're ruining my life, and he's like, sorry.
I think that they do her perfectly in the opening scene, but like the after the married opening scene, not the romance at the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, where they have like a huge argument, and then it's time to go, and they make up immediately. It's like, that's perfect. That's great. And they never do it again.
It's also, you can be disappointed in her because at least twice the Pepsi Edge is her fault.
Yeah, that's true.
It being literally the center of the camera as they make up at the end of the movie.
Wait, was the Pepsi Edge there before the 6-year time jump?
I think it was, but I'm thinking back on that. I'm like, that can't be right.
I think it is because like they don't do any effort for the 6-year time jump. I was surprised when they did it.
Because no joke, I'm sitting here remembering the Pepsi Edge thing, and I'm like, I must be misremembering because I remember it being there before the time jump. And then you said it, and I'm like, oh God, oh shit, you got to be kidding here.
Yeah,
that's not just me misremembering. One moment, I'm checking the movie.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, I just rolled my eyes during those scenes where she's like, you haven't even looked at the house yet.
Yeah.
That's how I know you truly aren't doing anything to try and help me.
I don't know. Every time she was on screen, I'm like, oh, Gabrielle Union, you're in so many better movies. please go back.
Yeah, I know I've seen her in better movies, but frankly, I don't know what. This movie on YouTube is 480p.
Yeah, so it looked exactly right.
I was like, good enough.
You're watching it on cable TV, Dan.
Also, oh man, like, I know YouTube is harsh on, like, codecs and stuff, but every character's, because, you know, it's a black cast, every character's face goes to green way too soon.
Oh, no.
This is bad. This is real rough. I would screen cap it, but I can't. YouTube prevented me from doing a plagiarism. They're like, please don't plagiarize. And I'm like, that's not what that word means.
Well, now we got to move on to best scene. Sorry, Bob, you have to go again. What's the best scene?
We already talked about it, but I think like it is the best scene in the movie. I can't deny it. The scene where John Leguizamo is breaking into a dog kennel and they have to do a mini like crouch to make a cop not see them.
It's like a fucking stealth mission in a PS2 game.
And, yes.
And then the camera turns to 180 and they get the platforming challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, the caution meter just unfills and then everything's back to normal.
It's like a really rudimentary one. It's like, we don't have noise. We only have line of sight.
Yes.
Okay. No, Bob. Before the time jump, it is a Remax sign, not a Pepsi Edge sign.
Thank God.
Pepsi Edge, a real popular 1999 drink.
Yeah. After the time jump, though, they find time to work in some Pepsi Edge.
Oh, thank God.
You worry.
When this movie was doing that opening sequence and talking about being before it, 2000. I was like, why though? Why are you just pretending this is a period piece from 5 years before it came out? I was like, that hardly gets you anything.
I'll go next. So there's a scene in the movie where Ralph is driving the bus at night when we only see him driving the bus in the day up until that point, outside of the very, very start of the movie. And there's only one lady on the bus with him.
Yeah.
And he explains that he's going to be working double shifts for a while because he needs money. And she's like, oh, what's the problem? Gambling? Drugs? Hoes?
Yes! Yes!
And then Ralph's like, no, ma'am, I'm just a fuck up.
Yeah, but this is really
aren't
good.
We all? And that was a scene that got me pretty good, specifically her saying hoes.
Yes, no, that
which
was
is like,
you're,
this is a little bit racist, but
I mean, he's a bus driver, it's midnight, she's just like, there's gotta be some vice, because she, I think she uses the word vice. She's like, what's your yes. vice? I think it's
drink,
really good.
Gambling?
Yes!
Hoes?
Drink hoes! Oh, man.
That's the best character in the movie.
Yeah, honestly, that was so good.
Aggro, what's the best scene?
So there's a scene that it exists in every single underdog sports movie.
Oh, goddamn.
And it also exists in the 30-minute underdog sports movie that's shoved in the middle of this other movie.
Yeah, of course.
Where the ragtag team meets their coach, who's at his lowest point in life.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's like John Candy in the bar in Cool Runnings, or it's what's his face from the Mighty Ducks after going to court, and this is community service. But in this movie, John Leguizamo goes the extra fucking mile when we come across him siphoning gas out of a car with his mouth.
Yes.
In the parking lot behind the dog track.
Oh, I shouldn't have eaten the mint first.
And they start talking to him, and he's like, he's pulled out all these wrong business cards, one of which is literally, by his own admission, underage mail order brides.
What? Oh.
The governor of New York gives me lots of business.
This is this man is one of those, you know, jack of all trades, master of none types, where he's like, yeah, I do all this stuff. And you're like, oh, he's clearly lying. But then 10 minutes later, he's legitimately trained a dog they found in a dumpster to run competitive greyhound racing.
Yeah.
So he might be one of those guys who's just he's this adept genius at most everything, but he can't actually function in society. He's this
he's
tragic
a Sigma male.
Genius.
Yes.
Also, there's like you get all sorts of like drama every time you enter a scene where he's already at the location because he's always on the phone. And this is something I should have brought up in the best character segment where he's like, nah, I'll get your money. I'll get your money. Yeah, 10,000. God. Bye, Mom.
Oh, God.
Yes, it was really good.
Then something about how it was like, I paid for her plastic surgery. I don't know what she looks like anymore.
Yeah, I paid for her plastic surgery, and now I can't find her. I don't know what she looks like anymore.
I like the scene where they come up on him. He's like, oh, he's hanging around someone else on the dog track. Oh, he's taking their wallet.
In broad daylight,
he's like, no,
on the
he's
field.
My buddy.
Yeah, no, yes. It's incredible. Incredible. God, this movie really would be lesser without Leguizamo.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, it would be. It'd be just brain dead.
Yeah, it'd be a void.
But, Dan.
I was terrified, mortified. This entire recording, I just wanted one thing: to be the one to bring this scene. We didn't reference it in the synopsis.
Oh, shit.
It was skipped entirely. So, they're going to a dinner.
Yes!
This dinner is full of the people who are going to be there for the race tomorrow. You know, team sponsors, stuff like that. This is where they find out the owner has been bribed to remove their dog from the race by, you know, rich white men.
Mm-hmm.
And in this scene, wearing this ridiculous fucking outfit that Ralph got from John Leguizamo, he got it from Dodge.
Yeah, big yellow suit.
That makes him look like a pad of butter. The bloopers at the end had four different ways they phrased this ridiculous outfit or something. They improvise because they are mistaken for the musical guest, which immediately set off a flag for me where I'm like, this is going to be the most absurd. They look nothing like the musical guest at all. They get access to the piano on stage, and Ed just plays piano to go along with the speech that Ralph has improvised to inspire the crowd to force his manager to put the dog in. It was a very hilarious scene to me. Especially when, after all this motivational stuff, Ed falling out of the chair because he went too ham on the piano and all this other stuff, they leave the party.
Yep.
It shows the musical guest two Asian guys. And I'm just like, the Asian guy with the yellow suit isn't even portly. How did you?
The suit is the only description the hostess was given on this guest.
Really good because people there are like, I really love your work.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, what?
That was also the scene we find out about more about the owner of the dog field.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Where John Leguizamo was like, you gotta respect the man. He started with $5,000 and now he's $2 million in debt.
And
I was like, yeah.
And all that did was continue to make me love John Dodge's character.
It's yeah, that scene has most of the best lines in the film. It's got the best outfit in the film. Is there a best dress segment on this?
No, I'm sorry.
Jeez. But yeah, great scene. Lovely scene. I was mortified I wouldn't get to pick it.
Casey.
Well, Dan's already picked the best scene in the movie. So I instead have to pick one of the other ones. The auction scene in which they just bully Kawakami, the Asian businessman, by just pressing the door against him and not letting him back in. I found that ridiculously funny of just bullying this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And just the energy of like, no, no! Because it's like, right as he steps out, like, the announcer starts and he gets the vibe immediately and it just kills me where I'm like, this is happening right now.
Yeah, it's clearly a cartoon at this point, which yes. is very good.
It became a cartoon, and I immediately went, this has to have been an episode of The Honeymooners. Just this situation.
Yeah. Worst scene time.
No.
I'll start. The scene where he splits up with Norton, where Ralph splits up with Norton. It's in every fucking movie that has, like, a pair as the protagonist, and it's dog shit in every single movie it's ever been in.
Mm-hmm.
Unequivocally the worst scene in any movie that it takes place in. Bob.
There are actually a good number of just bad scenes in this movie, but
yeah.
I'm gonna nominate the intro musical number, which is just horribly done. It's
yes, it sure is.
It's just bad. And I'm like, it sets a tone for the whole movie of just, is this what's going to be? Like, really unprofessionally made musical numbers?
I think I said to myself while watching it during that, how did we get here? That I have to watch this.
Yeah, he's driving to the music, and I'm kind of okay with that. Then he sees, you know, Alice. He doesn't know her yet. He slams the brake. He backs up the bus.
Uh-huh.
And then he keeps dancing to the music, and he dances around her, and he keeps going.
Yeah, no, like, the you're right. Driving the bus part wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
The backing up part, kind of funny.
Yes.
Getting out and dancing was like, okay, no, you need to stop.
And,
see,
and then it kept
I was
going.
I was under the impression that, in the very start, that they were already together in this scene, and that's why he's dancing.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, he's doing like a goofy thing because they're already together.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Right.
Yeah, and then it hits you like a truck a few seconds later.
And it's like, let's skip past the entire relationship, even though we showed the start of it, because we're really, we don't know how to make a movie.
Yeah, I feel like we did not need to see the start of this relationship at all.
Like, what's the origin story of the Honeymooners? Shut the fuck up. That's what. A woman settled. It kind of happens every day. Oh, no.
Impossible.
KZ.
Oh, God. There's some stinkers in here. Up and down. You already picked what I would have picked in terms of, like, the worst one. Let's see. The dinner scene that they have with the mother... With the mom, where it's like, we're gonna sabotage the white meat to make it not work out, because you don't want to find out about, like, what's going on with the bank account or anything like that. I just felt like I was bored through parts of it.
Some of the material the mom has is pretty bad. Just in general, I was like, I'm not really feeling this scene.
I think the mom sucks. You know, that's why I nominated her. But I actually like that scene because of the completely bizarre, hey, let me eat your plate. And then he's like, nah, I wanted mama to eat the white meat. And she's like, I'm okay eating dark meat. And he's like, no. Because he put the cayenne pepper all under the skin of the white meat. Like, as though she wouldn't take one bite or even try to cut it and the powder would just fall out. Because he just patted it deep underneath that.
No, it's okay. It's like a sponge. It's already inside the core.
It's like, I don't think you understand how chicken works. It's not completely absorbed. You put way too fucking much underneath that. I think that is, like, she sucks as a character in that scene for sure. That's her role. I kind of enjoyed the fucking, because there's the fucking, when it's clear his plan, his shitty plan of I'm going to make her mom eat cayenne pepper for some reason because I dislike her because she's making fat jokes and he doesn't want the plan to work out money wise.
Yeah.
Because that'll totally sabotage that. He does that. And when Alice is like, no, she can eat my plate, he just goes, woman! I'm just like, what the like, this really isn't going your way, and now you're not even dealing with it well. So that we get to see the rest of that scene as Ralph has to eat this over-cayenned chicken, and that's the thing we were talking about earlier of, like, you know, later in the movie, she's like, he seemed like he had a lot of anxiety, which shows that he's mature and thinking about this. Instead, it's like he's dying from hot food, like he ate a Korean spicy cheese ramen.
Yeah, I think it's just because I've seen this genre of scene so many times of, I'm trying to do the trick. We have to hide the fact that you can't see this one part of the house because we've got a dog in it and it's eating the big box of cereal. We don't own paper towels like that stuff.
All of that is so weird and unnecessary in this scene, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's that stuff mainly in between some of her material being bad that I just was, I'm like, I don't need to ever see this type of scene again in my entire life. So that's why I'm like, I'm going to rank it low.
In the future, movies will save money by just having a text prompt on the scene. It'll just say, please imagine bad dinner comedy scene.
I put that in my list of things I never need to see again, alongside seeing Bruce Wayne's parents die. in terms of film shit, I don't need to see anymore.
This one might be different.
and this one, his parents will deserve it.
Oh, okay, good.
Aggro.
So, at the end of Act 1, we've got that bit where Ralph.
Oh, you can determine acts. You're good.
Oh, yeah.
A professional.
Is this 1-1 or 1-3?
it depends on whether you're playing the original film or the post Redux 0.36 version that they released in region 2, markets only. Anyway, there's that scene where Ralph is opening up the box and it turns out, you know, he got all the wrong shit. It's all lime green teddy bear gear. Right before that, there's a sequence that it was so unrealistic it took me right out of the movie, where they depict the Mets winning a baseball game.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
It's weird. And just like, you're in some fantasy world and you just can't understand,
right? Like, even in an early 2000s comedy, it was just like, that's just, it's absurd is what it is.
Yeah, but, baby.
And it ground the whole thing to a halt
for
me.
But see, that's the thing, Aggro. That's the movie asking you to give it the suspense of disbelief because it needs you to have that skepticism so that way when they actually win, the joke is they still fucked up. They bet on the most unlikely event.
I have a suspension of disbelief, like my car has a suspension. But if I drive it over a fucking log, it's going to break.
He's making some good points.
Dan, give us the final fucking part of this segment.
Okay, so since I'm the final part, I'm going to do something we generally don't want, but I feel like everyone would agree with it and totally understand where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every fucking scene between Alice and Ralph about their relationship and how the house is making that even more problematic. There are countless of them of, I'm upset at him. Now my friend's going to try to cheer me up. I'm upset at him. It's just, the movie would be so much better if you just removed all of that.
Yeah, that's why I,
they spent too much screen time on it.
Yeah, I didn't want to choose every single one of those like you did, which is why I didn't pick that, because it is the worst.
You can't even tell them apart. They're shades of gray.
Yes.
It's so nonstop throughout the film. You have to get, like, the weird, like, swatches or whatever, patches of colors for paint at the fucking hardware store, where it's like, that scene in a slight blue tint, because there's so many in this.
Have you looked at the duplex yet?
They just all blur together, and it truly just drags this film down, as it's like, guys, we don't need this. Looking back on the film, it's hard to remember them distinctly from each other. They all just run together in my head.
It's goo, okay? There's nothing new you're experiencing here.
Yeah.
If you've watched a movie of this type, you've seen it.
To make up for what one might consider a brain dead nomination for worst scene, which I it needs to be emphasized.
It is the worst part of the film.
And it's nonstop. Like, it just keeps coming back.
It is the worst aspect of the film. So.
I want to bring up an extra best scene. They go, oh, man, we got to get that money in order to afford to get this dog trainer or whatever. And they start doing begging for money while blind, dance competitions, and a billion different things that are insane.
Yeah, I loved that. Didn't they get robbed during the dance one?
The weirdest thing is that's one of multiple montages in this movie. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
please stop.
That was in Act 1-7, Bob.
Yeah, that one was funny because I'm like, is this really your plan? You're going to have the jukebox and just... Boombox, Jesus Christ. You're going to have the boombox and sit there and do a dance on this fucking plywood in order to impress locals and try to get money and then pretend to be blind and harangue people? Like, it was insane. And it's a shame the movie got more normal after that.
Some of the parts of that montage were killing me, where it's like they're using metal detectors to try and find money and they step on a $20 bill and don't notice it.
Yeah.
And the other one where it's like, we're doing a scratch ticket. Aw, we missed. They drop it on the ground next to what seems to be 100 scratch tickets that they already did.
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. This was the opposite of your plan.
I'm like, what? What?
What are you doing? I appreciated that scene just like I appreciated the billiard scene, but that's maybe an extrinsic quality of that scene as opposed to intrinsic. Where it's just like, that sure is literally the exact opening of that episode of
the
Honey Bun.
The guy that beats them up even kind of looks like the big guy.
I thought they were going all in on it. Movie was so early on, I'm like, is he going to be the arch?
They had so much nothing to include in the rest of the movie.
That scene definitely got deleted.
Yeah, no, I was really hoping they'd do that.
I almost want to believe that they ad-libbed that one part where they get thrown out, where Ralph goes, where's my other hand? As if it's gotten ripped off.
Yeah.
Well, because they got shoved into the same coat.
Yes. But yeah, that's it. I'm done.
time to rate this movie. Dan, what did you think of The Honeymooners?
I've watched worse movies by a lot, for maybe not necessarily the Fight Club version of the show, but this show. It's still not good. I still wouldn't say it was a delight to watch. I'm going to go ahead and put it on just barely the negative side of neutral. I'm going to put it at like a -2, you know, it's got too many of that romance scene. It's got too many. It's yeah, I'm going to put it at -2.
Is a good term. Bob.
Yeah, I'm also going to put it on -2 as well. Cause it's not like gross. There's no point in this movie where I'm just like, ugh, I don't want to watch anymore. It's like, I'm
yeah. There's no Strim.
Yeah, it's just all goo. Like there's some funny bits with John Leguizamo, but everything else is just mush.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you want to come over to my house and eat? It's like, nah, last time I came over, you fed me a pound of instant mashed potatoes with no other vegetables or food.
You didn't even give me butter.
There was no salt.
Starch.
You didn't even make it with milk. You just made it with water.
KZ.
I'm also in that general range. I think I'm going to give it a negative two because despite... whenever it's trying to be this factory-made... love story generic movie of the late 90s early aughts, it's really terrible. But when John Leguizamo's on screen, they're doing something, you know, they're ad-libbing some funny bits, and that's when it breathes life into the film. And it would be a lot higher up, but the things that drag it down just drag it down so much that it just feels like I could watch this anywhere. But we've watched so many worse things on this show. So this sits comfortably at a negative two for me.
Aggro.
I'm going to be a little bit more generous to this movie. I'm going to give it a one. It was honestly a lot more sincere and well-intentioned than this project really could have been.
Yeah.
it could have been a lot more cynical and like with a modern twist.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank God it's not that.
Like, they really nailed the main four of the cast. It's, like I said, it was a nice, well-intentioned early aughts comedy, which means it didn't make any sense and was kind of bad, but had a bunch of actors where you're like, oh, hey, it's that one. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Yeah, they got work. Cool. So it's like, I'm going to give it a one. It's you know, a little better than break even, because anything that just lets John Leguizamo go for the entire middle section is okay in my book, except for the past that movie can burn in hell.
Yeah, I can. Okay. Yeah, it's like, you're condemning that, right?
What is it? The fucking matriarchs, the patriarchs of negative fives would probably be To Boldly Flee and The Best.
True two titans. I'm gonna be slightly more negative on this movie because it's like poison for me specifically. Because it's just all these little scenes that are just, there's a really stupid confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
That's every scene almost, and I fucking hate those kind of scenes. And that's every scene in this movie. So I'm gonna give it a negative three. That we have watched much worse things.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
But this is. Roger Ebert gave this a 3 out of 4.
Whoa.
And I think he, from what I've, because he also really liked the, what is that motherfucker's name? Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
He really liked the Adam Sandler Longest Yard also. And I'm like, he just must love compromise movies. You know, when you, the whole family is together and it's like, we have to go to the movies. The 4-year-old has to be able to see this, but half the adults will cry if we have to see a cartoon. What are we seeing? I guess The Honeymooners.
Yeah, and that's most of my movie going experience as a child. So like,
oh, no.
you know, I didn't understand movies could be good for a while.
Oh, no,
I'm gonna be honest. I enjoyed The Longest Yard.
I get tumbled out of the van that is my childhood watching movies into Agra going, hey, I own every Planet of the Apes, and I'm like, hey, this 2-1 is pretty good.
This is much better than when I had to watch Epic Movie.
Yes, it's much better than Malibu's Most Wanted.
Now that's a fucking film, baby.
Does anybody have any final thoughts on The Honeymooners other than don't watch it?
I think everyone's scores are really fair. I agree with exactly what Agra said of this could have been way more cynical and way harder to watch.
Yeah.
I was worried it was that the whole time. I'm like, oh, God.
I spent the whole movie going, wow, this is really like post 9/11 make something really comfy kind of filmmaking.
Yeah. It's, in many ways, it was better than I was worried it would be. Maybe Roger Ebert was a fan of The Honeymooners, because once again, you know, the characters were really faithful.
Yeah.
I think they nailed that.
Oh, yeah. It felt like the exact same.
Yeah.
Yeah, it actually did, especially Norton. That's just the exact same character.
That billiard scene, just, I'm like, this is the exact same thing. It's just not nearly as loud with him yelling of just do it.
Yeah, they got the dance and everything.
God.
It's really good. The waving the stick on opposite ends over and over of the billiards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they got it. I wish the movie went off a tangent there, and that guy, the huge dude, was just the arch the entire rest of the
time. I would not have been able to handle funny. It. I could not handle it just being the movie version of an episode we watched.
He's like, Ralph, stop dodging the fight!
For 90 minutes.
Like, I don't need I don't need that. And then it's like, I misremembered the next movie we're going to watch that had the Great Gazoo in it.
Next time. The Flintstones. Please be better. Please be better. Please be better.
If it's not better, I'm gonna just stop trusting every opinion child me had.
Yeah, I know. This is do or die.
Let's hope it yabba dabba does.